Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing and largest segment of society, to those of you who have come to realize the startling, shocking, ironic truth that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are counterproductive. They're working against us, not for us. They're corrupt. And that there is no hope of resolving the problems that ail any of them. They cannot be fixed. I am Yada. Our phone number, if you'd like to challenge these conclusions, good luck with that. Or if you would like just to engage in this conversation, we'd enjoy that. It's toll free, 877-300-7645. Yesterday, I shared something that I thought was startling. Now, I think it's startling because I just didn't see anybody being so aggressively opposed to the U.S. Constitution, who was sworn to defend it, doing such a thing. And I will tell you that initially when this moron, this narcissistic moral morass of a human being, was elected president, those who are still somewhat active in politics in the sense of their throw all the bums out type of response to politics, said that this man would make ammunition illegal. And that you'd better bulk up your supply of ammunition because he would make it illegal. And since he could not ban the guns because of the Second Amendment of the Constitution, he would do everything he could to constrain them and to whittle away at every aspect of the Second Amendment of the Constitution, which has nothing to do with hunting, for those of you who suggest that an assault rifle is not a hunting rifle, therefore it shouldn't be allowed. The weapons allowed under the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution are the weapons that would be used by a militia. Militias don't go on hunting trips, folks. The very weapons that are spoken of that we have the right to keep and bear, which means there cannot be any restriction on carrying a weapon any place at any time. No certification, no rules, no issues whatsoever, no challenges to it, and no limits on the kind of weapons that you should have. Any rule, like the rules in New York City, the rules in Washington, D.C., on owning and possessing a firearm are absolutely unconstitutional. So I did not think that anyone, no matter how egotistical, no matter how moronic, no matter how opposed to the very Constitution they had sworn to serve, so therefore dishonest, morally incompetent, morally compromised, hypocritical, would do such a thing. And yet I was told it was going to happen. And at the end of our first hour yesterday, I began this story, which is to say that the Obaminator, directing one of the alphabet soup agencies of the federal government that has turned your federal government into a military institution where the citizens of this country, that would be you and I, are their targets, their enemy, their foe. Like the FBI, like the CIA, now part of Homeland Security, and therefore a federal agency, armed federal agency, prowling the streets and spying upon, constraining the liberties of Americans. Don't think for a moment they're protecting you, because they're not. The ATF is another one of the alphabet soup agencies, and there are so many of them. For those that watch the drama show, NCIS, that would be the naval version of it. There's military police. There's federal police. There's the Department of Justice, which has its marshals. There are so many national policing agencies, in addition to the National Reserve, the Army Reserve, which is
again, a domestic policing agency, the way it's deployed. And when you see them come out in SWAT teams now, even your local police are militarized, and there's really no distinction now, no clear lines of distinction between federal police, local police, federal agents, and the U.S. military. The weapon systems are very similar. Their tactics are very similar. Their training is very similar. And most of the time, one simply migrates from one to the other. Well, the Obaminator announced that 5.56 millimeter ammunition would be outlawed. It's drying up in stores. You can't even buy it now in stores. 5.56 and 223 is the ammunition that is used in what's called assault rifles. The most popular gun in America is the AR-15, called a Bushmaster. I own one. As a matter of fact, it's my AR-15 that's on the front cover of Tea with Terrorists. I shoot it back in the woods against tin cans and targets from time to time. This president, egotistically, unconstitutionally, has taken it upon himself to ban the ammunition for the gun, which means that it's no longer an R, which means that he's just a weasel trying to play semantics with the very Constitution he was sworn to serve. He ought to be impeached on that grounds alone. He ought to be impeached, of course, for saying the Islamic State is not Islamic, and then saying that they're not a state, and then declaring war on them. Ought to be impeached for that. But he most certainly ought to be impeached for this act. You know, the only way for your government to be wholly tyrannical is for the people to be unarmed. That's why Thomas Jefferson wrote famously that the establishment of a military, an established military, was the single greatest threat to a nation's and people's freedom. That if a nation had an established military, they would lose their freedoms. That's why the Second Amendment specifically mentions a militia and then ties a militia to a free society. The people have to be better armed than the government, or the government will act in a tyrannical fashion. You know, what's amazing about the U.S. military is that most people have been hoodwinked into believing it is a force for good, that it is providing a service for which they ought to be grateful, that this institution that provides and allows absolutely no freedom whatsoever for those who are part of it is assumed to be providing our freedom, when none of that is true. Protecting our liberty, none of that is true. I have never fought to protect American liberty, ever. But what's amazing is that the power of the U.S. government, which is empowered because it is armed to the hilt, the U.S. government is, and its spy agencies, which are related, cost more than the rest of the world's military and spy agencies combined. And its national policing force and its Department of Justice force us to pay for the malfeasance of this very government. I don't like torture. I think a government that tortures is immoral. And yet, if I decide that I don't want to contribute monetarily to my government torturing people, I will be thrown in jail and I will lose my savings. If I opposed my government invading countries based on law, lies, and then making those countries vastly worse than they were before, like Iraq and Iran, like Vietnam, and I say, I don't want to pay for that, I don't want it done in my name, they will take my money and throw me in jail. Because they can. Because we've not heeded Thomas Jefferson's advice. And we've allowed them to establish a military, and we have constantly supported politicians who have been hypocritical, immoral, dishonest regarding their sworn oath to defend the Constitution that they are chipping away at every possible occasion. And so we pay for the most murderous and destructive, least freedom-oriented behavior a society can indulge in. Now, Thomas Jefferson said the established military would not only rob a citizenry of its freedom, as it has in America, but that it would come up with false reasons to go to war and would be in a constant state of war. America, through my last study several years ago, had fought 101 wars in the 400 years since the Europeans invaded this continent. It's many more than that now. It would be in a constant state of war. It would bankrupt the country, robbing its productive citizens to pay for such stupidity. It would use all forms of propaganda, Jefferson said, to justify the establishment of a military and the very wars that it was fighting, which is what we have seen in this country in spades. That it would overly empower the commander-in-chief, which is precisely why presidents declare war, makes them more popular and immune from criticism. It would establish corruption as the mainstream of the federal government. And that's what has occurred. Everything Jefferson warned us about, if we had an established military, has come true. And now the President of the United States is in a position where if he wishes to be dishonest, and he does, if he wishes to be a hypocrite, and he is, he can undermine the rights of citizens, their freedoms, their stated rights in the U.S. Constitution by unilaterally declaring an end to the sale of 5.56 millimeter ammunition. Except, my friends, to guess whom? The U.S. military, federal agents, and local police. They will have all of that ammunition they wish to have. But you won't have any. Once again, it's all designed to rob you of your freedoms and your rights, while most simply yawn in their ignorance and apathy. Executive actions to impose gun control on the nation, targeting this top-selling rifle in the country, the AR-15, style semi-automatic, with a ban on one of the most used AR bullets by sportsmen and target shooters. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, so now it's the ATFE, this month revealed that it is proposing to put the ban on 5.56 ammo on the fast track, immediately driving up the price of the bullets and prompting retailers, including the largest of them, like Cabela's, to urge sportsmen, to urge Congress to stop the president from his unconstitutional act. Wednesday night, Bob Goodlatte, who I know quite well, Republican chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, stepped in with a critical letter to the Bureau demanding it explain the surprise and abrupt bullet ban. The National Rifle Association, which is working with Goodlatte to gather co-signers, said that 30 House members had already co-signed the letter, and Goodlatte and the NRA are hoping to get a total of 100 fast. Can you imagine? Over 500 congressmen, and only 30 signed the letter initially, and they're hoping to get 100. I mean, every one of those congressmen, and women, pledged, swore a solemn oath to defend the U.S. Constitution. We did a story on the report from the U.S. War College on the fact that the culture of the U.S. military had turned wholly disingenuous, that from the enlisted to the highest level officers, they were prone to be dishonest, that it was their first inclination was to deceive, and that dishonesty was so rife in the U.S. military that it had become ingrained in its culture. And I'm here to tell you, it's not just the U.S. military. It's the federal government. From top to bottom. It is all of our national security agencies. And we saw James Clapper perjure himself before Congress. And because perjury and dishonesty
is so universal in our federal government, all the way to the top with this president, is so universal with prior presidents like George Bush saying that we have to invade Iraq because the smoking gun is going to be a nuclear bomb because Saddam Hussein had imported large amounts of yellow cake uranium, all of which he knew at the time was a lie, but he said it in his State of the Union speech to justify a war, just like Lyndon Johnson used the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which did not occur, to justify the conflict in Vietnam. The sinking of the Maine, the sinking of the Lusitania. You know, a history of presidents justifying wars on a pile of lies. It has been the norm with our national politicians and with our military to be dishonest. There's a whole and total breakdown of morality. And I'm going to tell you that I think it's not just our federal government, and it's not just our military, and it's not just police that kill with impunity and then lie about it. Oh, he was trying to steal my gun. I had to shoot him. It's Americans. Americans in large have become dishonest. Even those who are pretending to be moral. You know, they'll say, oh yeah, I got X number of expert opinions on something, and they did nothing of the sort. I did this, that, and the other thing, and no, it's a grotesque exaggeration. And I suppose that is in large part to two factors. One is the fact that we have an established national religion now, also in conflict with the U.S. Constitution. It is called socialist secularism. And its moral code is political correctness, and its moral code is being imposed on the country. Every aspect of it, in terms of a celebration of homosexuality and sexual perversions, really of all kinds. Perversion, I just mean that which is abnormal. Being transgender, for example. And part of political correctness is that the ultimate crime in political correctness is being judgmental, is exercising good judgment, of discerning right from wrong, of distinguishing good from bad, truth from dishonesty, being trustworthy. And I suspect that, to a large degree, the reason that America's armed forces are universally dishonest, untrustworthy, and our politicians are universally dishonest, untrustworthy, and our intelligence and security agencies are universally dishonest and untrustworthy. In fact, all of them are grotesquely immoral. Is because that's what the people have been conditioned to accept. The purpose of political correctness. It's the reason it permeates all levels of academia. Dateline Jerusalem, during Israel's 50-day war against Hamas, and really that's misstated, but that's the nature of the media today. They're clueless. It was really Hamas's 50-day war against Israel. Hamas started the war with the brutal kidnapping and murder of four Israeli youth, one girl, three boys. All teenagers. And then they responded by celebrating the murders, which is behavior beyond reprehensible. I mean, to think that the United States is trying to give a reward, an independent state, to those who not only inspire, encourage the kidnap and murder of children, but who celebrate the kidnap and murder of children. Immediately after that, Hamas responded by firing rockets into Israel, trying to kill civilians, unprovoked. And then in addition to that, they fired those rockets from places where they knew Israel would retaliate to take out the rocket launchers, so they fired the rockets from schools and hospitals and next to apartments. And then when Israel notified by cell phone, by leaflet, by loudspeaker,
the people who were in and around those schools, hospitals, and apartments, that because the rocket launchers were there, they would retaliate by taking them out. They ought to leave. Hamas is so disgusting because of its Islamic corruption that it ordered those people to stay, telling them they'd be martyrs. You die, and you go directly to the Islamic paradise. That's, of course, if Muhammad was telling the truth, then he wasn't. Well, during that period of time, the world rose up and said, Israel is the warmonger. Israel is committing war crimes because they're bombing schools. And come to find out that even the bomb craters in schools were perpetrated by Muslims. They killed their own to make it look like the Israelis had bombed a school. Everything about these people is disgusting, reprehensible. So it just says the Israel's 50-day war against Hamas. It should say Hamas's 50-day war against Israel. And it only took place in Gaza because that's where the rockets were fired. That's where the tunnels led from. Last summer, residents of Israel's border communities lived in fear of rockets and mortar attacks or the possibility that Hamas militants could attack Israel through the tunnels that they had built. There was a story on those tunnels, in fact, several of them that I never covered in this program that I read several times and was going to cover, and it just got buried with other news. But there is only one person who was deployed building the tunnel who survived to tell the story. He fled. Those who built those tunnels were all kidnapped. They were put into forced slavery. They were all Muslims being enslaved by fellow Muslims. They were worked 18 hours a day. They were very often died from accidents in the tunnels, died from exhaustion, died from dehydration. But those who didn't die, after they could no longer work, they were killed by Hamas. That's how, again, reprehensible this fundamentalist Islamic organization is. So the Israelis were outraged to learn on Monday that three Israeli citizens had been charged on suspicion of knowingly supplying raw materials to Gaza that the Israeli authorities said were destined for Hamas to use in building up its military infrastructure. Now, to have an independent autonomy, to have autonomy over areas in the West Bank and Gaza, there were two specific concessions by Hamas and the PLO, which is the Palestinian Authority. And those two concessions were that they would be unmilitarized, they would not have weapons, and number two, that they would not indoctrinate their children to hate Jews and want to kill them. Well, of course, the nature of Islam is that it's wholly dishonest. It's a pile of lies and is perpetrated by liars. So the PLO and Hamas continue to indoctrinate their children to hate Jews and to be enraged, sacrificing their own lives to destroy Israel. And, of course, Hamas and the PLO are armed to the teeth. Now, the reason that these were called Israelis is you might think of, oh, well, Israeli citizens. They must be, you know, Jews being Benedict Arnold. No. The difference is that in Israel, a Muslim, an Arab, can have full rights of citizenship, benefit from all the freedoms afforded Jews. They can own a business, tax at the same rate as Jews. They can take advantage of the education system, the healthcare system, protection by the military, protection by the courts, full rights of citizenship. These Israelis were Muslims. They're traitors. They were Muslims. And so that's the nature of things. You know, in a Hamas-controlled territory, in a PLO-controlled territory, as the case of every Islamic country, Jews and Christians have no rights. The Quran tells Muslims to have them surrender, to be abused with the jizya tax, where they essentially have their wealth confiscated. And it's not just a confiscation of wealth, it's a confiscation of all rights. The Quran says that they must be treated in a way that they know that they've surrendered, that they have completely capitulated and are humbled by this subjugation that's being imposed upon them. And Muslims thereby never offer full rights to a non-Muslim in a country that they are the dominant religion. And yet they demand that for themselves and respect for their religion in countries that are not a majority Islamic, purely and wholly hypocritical. And if they were to gain control of said country, they would rob everyone of their rights except Muslims, while demanding that Islam be respected. Well, so there were six Muslim businessmen in Israel that had Israeli citizenship that had been indicted in connection with smuggling weapons to Hamas. Zion Amir, a lawyer for one of the Israeli suspects, told Israeli television that his client was selling permitted materials in Gaza. Yeah, I'm sure that was the case. That's why they've been indicted. Reuters is reporting that Western powers are preparing for what they say may be their most potent weapon against Moscow's interference in Ukraine. Now, this should read like I told you so. A multi-billion dollar aid package to rebuild the near bankrupt state and realize the European dream cherished by many Ukrainians. There you go. All laid out for you. There is very little, if any, Russian interference with the area supported by, allied with, the junta in Kiev, the thugs who took over the properly elected government through riots. In the northwestern Ukraine, in three-quarters of the country by size, by geography, there is absolutely no Russian interference at all. However, there is Western, European, and American interference. Through the International Monetary Fund, mostly funded by U.S. taxpayers, but also by German taxpayers and other Europeans. This dysfunctional moral morass of a junta was given $25 billion. It was the fifth time in their brief 20-year history as a failed state that they had been bankrupt. The Russians offered to give them $15 billion. And the Russians had an economic reason to do so. One of the largest pipelines was built through the Ukraine when the Ukraine was part of Russia. And so the Russians at least had an economic incentive and some collateral. But not the West. The West was simply trying to buy influence and gave the Ukrainians $25 billion. That's interference. And look how long it lasted. Now, the Ukraine is bankrupt again. $25 billion didn't last very long. We have created a dependent, and this dependent, like a heroin addict, is hooked on handouts. It is a failed state. It will continue to be a failed state. It has no hope of being anything other than a failed state. To whatever degree the Russians may be interfering in Donetsk and Luhansk, and we really don't know. We do know that the residents of Donetsk and Luhansk, to at about a 95% rate, want to have nothing to do with the regime in Kiev. And so Here you have the West doing the only thing it knows how to do, trying to buy love, making people dependent, transferring wealth from those who are productive to those who are counterproductive. It is a microcosm of what these same countries are doing in their own countries, and it is a way to assure that every economy fails. It's what's happening in Greece, Portugal, Spain, Italy.
There's just one problem. The foreign governments and international financing institutions are not willing to pour money into a dysfunctional state. Told you so. The Ukraine is amongst the most dysfunctional states in the world. In its 20 years, it's had two coups, both by riot. In its 20 years, it's been bankrupt. Now this will be the sixth time. There's 80% graft on the federal side. Analysts say that donors say that the former Soviet Republic, crippled by war and corruption, is unable or unwilling even to identify how many roads it has that need maintenance, how many power plants that it has and what their status is, how many schools are in the country, and how many that the 45 million people need, let alone meet the European standards for farms and factories. There is no chance whatsoever that the Ukraine can be brought up to European standards. Can't be integrated into the Eurozone. It is a wholly dysfunctional morass. And the fact that we gave it money and then encouraged it to go fight a war and engage in a civil war, which 10,000 people have died, bringing the world closer to world war over it, it's just almost unthinkable. But yet we did it. And now look at the mess. Now what do you do? You've given them $25 billion. They can't pay it back. They've squandered it already. You blame war when corruption is 100% of the case. There was no need for war. Donetsk and Luhansk is a small part of the country. They wanted no part of the coup. They wanted no part of the failed experience that has been the Ukraine as an independent state. They simply wanted to be part of Russia again. Why not let them? Why not allow the people to make their own determination? Why not let them? And then why did we pay for the Ukrainians, this Kiev regime, to go to war against its own people? We supplied 100% of the money and all of the intelligence, as well as the incentive for them to wage war, a civil war against their own people. That war wasn't fought in the area around Kiev. It wasn't fought in opposition to, aggressively against, those who wish to integrate with Europe. It was fought in the cities and towns surrounding Luhansk and Donetsk to force them to be part of this failed experiment. So what do you do now? There is no way to force them. You can't keep killing them. You can't keep funding this wreck of a state. So what do you do now? You know, it's what I've said so many times. It's really easy to start a war like this war against the Islamic State. Boy, it was easy to start. But how does it ever end? Why don't you tell me about a war that ended well? Please, I'm all ears. If you want to say World War II, then I'll tell you we left Europe worse than we found it by aiding and abetting Stalin and the tyranny that he imposed on Europeans. And if you want to talk about the Pacific Theater, then you tell me why we sacrificed hundreds of thousands of American lives and millions of Japanese civilian lives to avenge the death of 3,000 soldiers, sailors. and how that was moral, how that was a favorable outcome. And in the process, we pulled out the rug from Chiang Kai-shek and empowered Mao Zedong, who starved 40 million of his citizens to death. And we ended up fighting those very Chinese that we had empowered in Korea just 5 years later. So you tell me how that worked out favorably. It's easy to start a war. We started wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We just simply left Iraq broken, a country that experienced almost no terrorism and now that experiences scores of major terrorist attacks every day. A country right now where Tikrit, the city that Saddam Hussein came from, it's in full-out war. 30,000 people fled the city overnight because it's a full-out war. The Iranian military is engaged in that war against the Islamic State, and we are arming the Iranian military in opposition to the Sunnis of Iraq. And in Afghanistan, we still remain. 13 years later, 14 years later, a completely dysfunctional and broken state. It's easy to start a war. They're hard to get out of. Look at the Ukraine.